I'm Phil Gerbyshack. I'm your VP of Sales Training here at Vector Solutions, and I am super excited to share my friend Kendra Hall with us today. This is super, super exciting. I'm just honored that she would make time for us. But if you haven't read the book and you're like, hey, this is kind of cool, what the heck are we doing? Well, let me tell you a little bit about Kendra so that you can get to know her. So she's a professional storyteller, from Hilton Hotels to Facebook, from tech to financial services, for leaders in all roles and entrepreneurs across countless industries. Kendra Hall teaches each of them to harness and leverage the power of their stories. And today she's going to share how we can do the same thing. Kendra's a Wall Street Journal bestselling author of the book Stories That Stick. Pow, right here. It's a book that Forbes claimed may be the most valuable business book that you read. And I got to tell you, it's one of my favorites too. She's the president and chief storytelling officer at Stellar Collective. It's a firm focused on the strategic application of storytelling in business. No matter whether you're in sales or operations, if you're in accounting, finance, HR, development, 3D design, animation, whatever the heck it is, you can benefit from our conversation and this awesome book. She's a former director of marketing and VP of sales. So that's why she's in my heart and one of the most amazing people I know. She's a contributing editor to Success Magazine and was guest faculty at, get this, the Harvard Medical School. Now, while she'll never win the bake sale at her kid's school, she's always a welcome guest reader in their classrooms. Today, we're honored to bring author, communication expert, and professional storyteller, and my friend, Kendra Hall, to all of you. Hi, Kendra. How you doing, friend?
Hi. So good. So happy to be here.
So excited that you would make time for us. I'm just delighted that I get to share you with all of my coworkers. This is awesome, and everybody around the world. So we've got a lot to discuss. We're going about 30, 40 minutes today. But Kendra, I got to ask you, why stories? Why do you love them? Why do they matter?
You know, that's a loaded question. But, you know, I think sometimes you find a career or a calling, and sometimes a calling finds you. And really, I told my first story when I was 11. It was just an assignment for fifth grade, and we were supposed to go read a children's book to a third grade classroom, and that was the assignment. But when I got into the classroom, it was right at the end of the day, and so the third graders were just, I don't know if you've ever met a third grader, but then put a whole bunch of them in one room. Like, they were, it was pure chaos. And I remember, and the teacher was just in the back of the room, like, when are the buses going to come? And I had to stand up there and read a book, and I knew they weren't going to listen. So I decided to put the book down and just tell the story. And it took maybe three sentences, and all those third graders were like, all eyes were on me. I held them in the palm of my hand. And so at 11 years old, I remember thinking, maybe I'm onto something here. Like, maybe this is a thing. Now, of course, I didn't launch my career as a storyteller, but that moment was so powerful that I did then continue to just kind of test the efficacy, if you will, of storytelling. I would tell stories to my parents when I wanted them to extend my curfew. I would include stories in my research papers to A, fill space, and B, show that I understood the concepts that were there. I eventually ended up going to storytelling festivals, which, yes, they have those. And I really thought storytelling was just going to be a hobby. And I really wanted like a high-powered corporate job. Like, that's what I was going to, I didn't know what it was going to be, but I was going to wear high heels and stomp around office hallways. And people were going to fear me when they saw me coming. But as I moved into that space in marketing and sales, I wouldn't say that I was haunted by, but the power of storytelling just kept following me wherever I went. And, you know, when sales were down, I told more stories. When our marketing messages weren't hitting the mark, I would tell more stories. And so it really just became my default. And then several years ago, I thought, I really feel like other people need to know about this. And so I started working as a keynote speaker, and then, you know, the book followed, and now this is what I get to do.
Awesome. I love that. That's really, really cool. Yeah, I remember meeting you, 4 or 5 years ago at an NSA event, and it was just so fun just to see how you have transformed everything that you do. to be focused on storytelling. It's so, so beautiful. So I'm so grateful for that. So Kendra, I gotta know, is your husband into stories? I mean, if people haven't read the book yet, tell us about your husband and his love of storytelling as well.
So start back at the beginning.
So diddly loop. Let's rewind. So Kendra, you talked about your love of storytelling when you're 11, but let's talk about your husband and how he got kidnapped by a story. For those who haven't read the book yet, which you got to read, folks, you got to get a copy of Stories That Stick. But for those who haven't read it yet, talk to us about how your husband, who's not necessarily usually a storyteller, who got kidnapped by a story.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's always an interesting thing when you, when you're a practitioner of something, regardless of what it is, and then all of a sudden you see it in action and you are reminded of the power of what it is that you teach. So my husband and I were in Slovenia, which if you haven't been there, it's nestled right between Italy and Croatia, a beautiful country. And I was there because I was speaking to a big marketing advertising conference about the power of storytelling. And so we were touring around Slovenia. It was the evening of their big tree lighting ceremony. So it was dark, the air was damp, there were Christmas lights all along the cobblestone streets. And as we were walking, there was, you know, vendors with their shops open, chestnuts roasting on open fires. And we were just window shopping. We were looking at the items in the window. And I say looking because that was the deal we had made. My husband does not shop. Michael doesn't window shop. He doesn't online shop. He does no shopping whatsoever. And so we had agreed that we just weren't going to shop on this trip, which I was pretty much used to. And then additionally, we had each only brought one carry-on suitcase. So I had already bought a mug in Italy, so there was no room to buy anything. But as we were walking from across the cobblestone street, I saw it out of the corner of my eye. It was in one of the shop windows, it was a sparkly, glittery, sequency pair of sneakers. And I just, by instinct, I know people think it's high heels because I don't say that it's sneakers in the book, but they were sneakers, which made them even that more mind-blowing. So without even thinking about it, I grabbed my husband and I just pulled him into this little Slovenian boutique. And I hightailed to the back of the store, which is where I was pretty sure the shoes were. And he kind of hid behind the cologne counter because he didn't want to buy anything. Well, when I got up close, the shoes actually were ugly. And then I felt immediately guilty that I had betrayed my husband's trust. And so I ran back to the front of the store and was just about to pull him back out onto the cobblestone streets when from behind the perfume counter appeared this Slovenian sales clerk, young man, tall, really skinny fingers, I noticed. And he said to my husband, "Excuse me, sir, are you looking for a scent?" Now, the guy was so far off because A, not only was my husband not looking for a scent because that would imply buying a scent and we already covered that, but my husband, Michael, wears no cologne. He believes his natural scent is good enough for the world. So I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is not going to happen. And again, we were trying to get out the door, but then the clerk continued and he said, "Perhaps you'd be interested in this." And he pulled from one of the tops of the display shelves, this box. It was blue and white striped. And on the front of it, it said 8 and Bob. That was the name of the cologne. And the clerk said, "It is our best seller." And just then we were about to just kindly leave, call it like a language barrier. I don't know. And he said, "Let me tell you the story." And the clerk started telling this story. He said, "Long ago, there was a young American and he was by all accounts, absolutely irresistible, handsome, smart. Everyone could sense that he was a rising star. And one day he was traveling in the French Riviera and he was sitting outside at a bistro and a gentleman walked by. And on the air that followed him was this incredible scent. Well, the young American had to have it. And so he stood up and he chased the man down. Well, it turns out the gentleman was a French aristocrat. I always screw that up. Aristocrat. Aristocat is the movie. Kids, they mess with you, Phil. Okay, so it's like a French aristocrat who dabbled in making his own colognes. He never sold them, but the young American begged him, and so sure enough, he gave him one of his bottles of his scent that he created. Well, when the young American got back to the States, if he was irresistible before, he was even more so now, and all of his buddies were like, we've got to have this cologne, like, this isn't fair. And so the American wrote to the Frenchman and said, would you please send me 8 more bottles and 1 for Bob? And at that moment, the sales clerk stopped and looked at us to see if we were listening. And we were, like, Michael hadn't blinked. And the clerk said, now you see, Bob was the American's brother. And you might know the American as John, or rather, J.F. And at that moment, the clerk stopped, and my husband responded,
hey.
Right? And so what it was is that it was JFK's cologne. So the clerk continued about how, you know, over time, trade between France and America had become complicated, and so he had to hide the cologne in books. And at that moment, the clerk pulled open the box, revealing a book, and then opened the book, and there nestled between the pages was the bottle of 8 and Bob. And my husband said, I will take it. And I've never heard him say these words before. Now, as it turned out, they were all sold out. Like, the clerk was so good that there weren't even any more bottles. Like, we couldn't buy it. But Michael was still, like, fueled by the story. We headed back out onto the streets. He was like, people have to know about this. And keep in mind, we didn't even smell it. Like, he didn't even spray the cologne. And so it was one of those moments where I got to see right there in action the power of a story. Here was a man who not only was not going to buy anything, and he was certainly not going to buy a product that he doesn't like, use, or need, or have any interest in, and yet he wanted to buy it. He was obsessed with it afterwards. And that is that's the power of a story.
Wow. I love that story. When I read that, that totally made me smile in the book. I was like, oh my goodness, because I can totally see that. And I think, you know, when we think about the folks that we serve at Vector, I mean, a lot of folks, they are looking for that story too. I mean, that's often why they buy from our sales team. That's why they like our marketing. And everybody in the organization certainly plays into that. But if you're not in sales and you're not in marketing, Kendra, why does storytelling matter?
Oh. You know, I really think that, so we're in a time, right, where there are ample opportunities to connect. I mean, look at us right here, where there's a group of us sitting on the line together. We have social media, like there's so many ways to be uber connected, and yet so many people feel disconnected. We feel sad about our lives. We feel alone or misunderstood. I mean, this goes away from business and it doesn't. And I really think that if people just had more faith and more awareness in the power of their stories in their life, even like really small moments, and then sharing them, being generous with those stories, whether it is at meetings in the office or when you're meeting when you meet a stranger or on your social media posts, like sharing those small stories, that's the most genuine way that humans connect. And not only that, but the person that you're sharing it with, it helps either give them a perspective on maybe something they hadn't seen or heard or understood in that way before. Maybe they've been living that exact same situation, and so you've just made them feel normal and grateful for that. And then internally for ourselves, you know, as we're looking at the moments in our lives as possible stories that could be told, it adds value and purpose to our own lives. And I think that's one of the great advantages, if there's anything, that I've had over the course of my life, having become a storyteller at such a young age, is I really do see the world and everything happening around me as a story. And sometimes we're in the middle of the story. And that's usually where the story is the hard is, you know, like if you're going through a tough, you're like, oh, but to have that be the, to have that be the thought process is, oh, I'm in the middle of this story right here. I'm in the middle. And when I get to the other side, when I get to the end of the story, like this is going to be a great story to tell to myself, to tell to my friends, to tell to my children, to tell to my colleagues. So I really do think that like storytelling would solve a lot of problems in the world. If not the world, then just with you and the person sitting next to you.
Yeah, well, they totally connect us. I really think that's the big power of that story, right? Because we get shared experiences. And at that point, even like, I'm guessing your husband has not met JFK or Robert Kennedy. And nonetheless, he's still connected to them now because of that story. And that, I believe, is the true power. The fact that we get that experience and we have those opportunities to really exchange and say, oh, well, I did this and therefore this. And now we're somehow connected in the middle of that connective tissue.
Yep.
Cool. So is there a magic to storytelling, Kendra? Like, is there a formula that you can share with us if we're listening, we're watching, and we're thinking, boy, I would like to tell better stories. Do you have a formula for us that you can share?
Yeah. So that was one of the things that was really important to me as I wrote the book, as I shared the message of storytelling, is that I don't feel like it's a new concept, and I don't feel like I'm the first person that has been talking about storytelling, and certainly not storytelling in business. Someone said to me, storytelling is having a moment, and I'm like, or it just is a big deal and has always been and will be, but that's beside the point. But I also, it was really important to me because I have been a user of stories, like a writer of my own stories, a student of stories, a teacher of stories, that I didn't just say, go tell your stories, but that I gave a framework. And then even beyond that, did some research on what makes a story compelling, what makes a story effective, what does your story need to have to really do the job that you need it to do. And that ties into strategic storytelling, like in business, but anytime you want your story to stick, what does it need to do? So in the book, stories that, hey, look at that, I just said the title of my book without really meaning to. It's a good title, I guess. But in stories that stick, I outline a framework, a three-part framework, and then also four key components that stories need to have. And my goal in this is to make it accessible to anyone. You mentioned, Phil, when you were introducing me, like whether you're in operations or whether you're in accounting. Now, those aren't people that you would think your mind would immediately go to, oh, those are the storytellers. And they might not see themselves as the storytellers, but there is a blueprint, there is a strategy, there is a system for telling stories. So the framework, and I'll just briefly talk about it here. Of course, there's a whole book about it. My book. So my whole book is about, okay, good. I'm like, no, don't go. It's not some other book. It's this one.
Okay. Get this one. Get stories that stick.
It's this one. But the three-part framework is kind of an adaptation on the classic storytelling, you know, the classic story model, which is beginning, middle, end, but where it becomes more useful and gives more guidance and shape to the story is to think of it as normal, explosion, new normal. So the normal is what was, you know, what was happening, what was at stake, what were you feeling, what were the surroundings. The explosion then is the thing that happened, kind of like the big thing of the story, the action point, the decision that was made, you know, the crazy thing that happened. And then the new normal is what is possible now as a results, like how are you different from. So for example, I was just thinking as I was talking about a couple minutes ago about stories and just seeing your life as a story, here's a little example. Last night, so this is where, okay, so is it okay if we do a little bit? I've never done this before, but we're going to do a little mad scientist thing here. So I said that there was, you know, like any moment in your life can be a story. So we had this thing happened last night. It was supposed to be date night, right? So date night, and this cool thing happened on date night, which is kind of the explosion. Like this cool thing happened on date night. And I could just say like, hey, we went out, we ended up at the St. Regis in New York City, cause that's where we live. And there was this old guy sitting behind us. And it turns out it's Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. Like that could be, wow, cool. But to make it a story, like the reason that this is so interesting is because we were supposed to go on this date night, and date nights are an important thing. I travel all the time. We've got a lot going on, right? So to stay connected as a couple, it's important to take time out. And it's also important because Michael doesn't usually schedule date nights. I usually schedule date nights. So he got this email that Leslie Odom, this guy who was Aaron Burr in Hamilton, was going to be giving a lecture last night. And he saw this come through and he bought us tickets and he was so excited. But then like as the date approached, our babysitter, like the night before, the babysitter called in sick. So I was like, oh man. So we quick scrambled to find a new babysitter. And then we realized it was daylight savings. So though the whole night felt like, you know, it's 7 p.m., but it feels like midnight or whatever. So by the time date night rolls around, we're exhausted, like we're tired. And then we find out that Michael thought it started at 7, but it actually started at 8, which is even later, which is 9, daylight savings time. So basically, we force ourselves to leave the house when what we really wanted to do was just stay home. So we go, we head up to where the show is, we walk in, security guards are there, and they're like, can I help you? We're like, we're here to see the show. And they're like, oh, there's no show. Like, no, there's a show. We have our tickets. They're right here. They're like, oh, yeah, no. It must have been canceled. There's no show. So we're like, oh, my gosh. Like, this what? Like, we got the babysitter. We put on clothes. Like, we're doing the date night thing, which we didn't even want to do. And now it's canceled. It's closed. And we stood outside the venue and we're like, do we just go back home and tell the babysitter we're sorry? And we just decided instead, you know, she made the effort. Maybe we'll just take a cab downtown and go to the St. Regis and just have a glass of wine and then go home. So we're at the St. Regis having a glass of wine. All of a sudden we look behind us and there's Jerry Jones. My husband's all excited about it. And Jerry Jones is talking to all the people. And he's meeting with like the owner of the Giants. And they have a big game. Everyone's saying good luck on your game. Good luck tomorrow. And I'm like, what are they? And we're like, oh, it's Monday Night Football. Like Cowboys must be playing the Giants. Like it was this whole cool thing that's like happening right behind us. And we're like there in the presence of it. And you know, and so then we're talking about, wow, like how do you get to that? You know, and I don't know much about it. And anyway, it just ended up being this like really cool thing. Cause it's always cool to see someone like that. Like that guy's a legend, like him or don't, you know, like, and so we were on our way home and just saying like, wow, that night, you just never know how a night is going to turn out. And even when we don't want to go, maybe we should, because it's unexpected nights like this that are the ones that stay with you. So, okay. So obviously this is the first time I've told that story. It just happened last night, but you could see right there in the arc of it. Whereas and this is where most stories go wrong, is you just say, oh, last night we saw Jerry Jones and that would be it. Like you would only talk about the explosion, but all the other stuff that added up to it, now that becomes a whole story. That could become a whole story about marriage and relationships. It could be a whole story about, you know, the unexpected joys if you just, you know, do the thing that maybe you don't want to do, or when something gets canceled, it could be because something better is waiting on the other side. So normal explosion, new normal is the framework. Does that help?
Yeah, that's great. Normal explosion, new normal. That's fantastic. I love that. That's an easy framework that we can do. So as we're thinking about that, right, how might you think about how that might play into, you know, someone not in sales or marketing, though, telling a story, right? Is there something that, because, you know, you work in sales and marketing, so I'm sure you work with accountants and financial people and stuff like that. So give us maybe one of your stories that maybe fits in that framework with the you know, the kind of all that framework. Can you hit us with maybe one?
One of my stories that isn't about sales and marketing?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe somebody that, or somebody that you know that maybe had that, right? Because you just gave us like a one of your husband's stories. So do you have like one that's maybe more work related? It doesn't, you know, it doesn't.
Work related.
Yeah.
So, well, actually, let me tell you the one that is in, because I also think it's important to note that they don't have to be big stories. Like they can be really small stories. And, so one of the stories that's in the book and one that I tell often is about this woman who is a financial advisor. Now, of course, her job is to gain new clients, to establish trust, to let the client know that that they can trust her with their money, like with their life savings, with their future. You know, like it's a big, it's all about trust and relationships in that industry and frankly in a lot of industries. So she went back through her childhood or just through her experiences, she was really looking to find the story that would build that bridge between her and a potential client. And the story came, was back when she was a little girl. Money was her favorite toy. Like money is the thing she liked playing with. She liked folding and unfolding the bills. She liked stacking the coins. She liked, she loved playing with money. And her mom would always say, you know, don't play with money, stop playing with money. And the girl would ask why. And the mother would say, well, money's dirty. And I thought that, you know, like money's gross, it changes hands. So the girl was really disappointed. And then she got an idea and she took all of her money and she got a little bucket and brought it out into the backyard and filled it with soap and water and carefully washed all the money and laid it out to dry. Well, her mom came outside and said, oh, what are you doing? I told you not to play with money. And the little girl said, but now it's clean. Like now you can play with money. And then the woman stops and says, I now know that laundering money is a bad thing. Which, okay, funny. But then she says, but you can trust that I will love your money too. So there, but like to just say to somebody like, oh, I'm going to love, you know, you can trust me. I will love you. I've always loved money. Like that isn't going to, but by telling that story, it instantly gives a perspective into who she is as a person while illustrating that really important point.
Awesome. That's a great story. That's such a great story, Kendra. I love that. So that's so fun.
Yes, I love that story.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So the book is terrific. If folks are thinking about getting the book, get it at storiesthatstick.com. Kendra's got stuff there. It's on Amazon. It's everywhere. But Kendra, what's one more tip? If folks want to get started storytelling on their journey, how would they do that, especially if they're not in sales or marketing?
Especially if they're not in sales
or
marketing?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's in any leadership role. So whether it is in business or in life, you know, we are all tasked with delivering important messages. So maybe it is like a Monday morning meeting that you have at the office. Maybe you have a meeting with your child school counselor or with their teacher. The first thing to do, here's really the first step, is to think about an upcoming situation, whether it is a meet or maybe you have to have a family meeting or maybe, you know, whatever it is, think about an upcoming event where you might be able to tell a story. Now that you know that there are so many options for stories and that it can be so valuable, what's an upcoming event, high stakes event, where maybe you could use a story? Start there, because I think picturing it in that way is really helpful. Then think to yourself, okay, what is the message that I need to deliver in this meeting? All right, like is it that, you know, like are you downsizing or are you shifting gears away from this methodology of operation to now this methodology of operation? Are you new in an organization and so you're the big meeting is that you're introducing yourself and you want them to know something about who you are and whether or not they can trust you? If it's something, you know, upcoming with your, I mentioned like an upcoming meeting for your child, maybe you need to convey the message that yes, learning can be difficult, but the excitement about learning is there. So tell a story about a time your child exhibited excitement for learning. So think about an upcoming event. determine what the key message is that you want to deliver. Then take a step back and just start thinking, when is a time that I saw that message in action? When was a time that I saw that action play out? And you're really just looking for scraps of moments of possibilities. And once you have a few of those, then you can start using the formula, the components we talk about in the book, to shape that story.
Awesome. Super beautiful. That's fantastic. So fellow coworkers, friends, everyone listening, take a look at Stories That Stick. If you haven't got your book yet, Kindred, you read the book, don't you?
Yeah, I read the audio.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So go to Audible. Amy's got a copy of the audio. I've got the hardcover. If you don't have it, get a copy of the book. If you want to, you know, I just encourage you folks, get a copy of the book and learn the framework and then put it into play and then re-listen to this. We're going to share this out again and again so you can get this. And you can get more from Kindra at kindrahall.com. That's kindrahall.com. And check her out on Instagram too. She's fantastic. And I'm so glad that she shared some time with us today. Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Phil. Thanks, everyone. This is great.
Yeah. Anybody have any questions before we wrap this baby up? Anything at all that you want to hear from Kindra as we're listening? Oh, we have a question for you. Which chapter of the book surprised you the most? What is that? Mike asked the question. So which chapter of the book surprised you?
You know what? I would say the chapter of the book that surprised me the most was chapter one. You know, obviously when you're writing a book, like, you write it in order pretty much. I mean, sometimes. So this book was pretty much written in order, but for whatever reason, chapter one, I wrote it the first time and it was just bad. And then I went back and I rewrote, because I had to write it for the proposal to even pitch it to agents and then on to publishers, and it just wasn't great. And then I went back and tried to rewrite it again and again and again and again. And then I pulled in the, like, originally the extra gum example wasn't in there. And I just, the whole rest of the book was, I mean, it was time for the book to almost go to print and I was still wrestling with chapter one. Everything else was done. And that surprised me. I mean, so I think that is, I'm a very linear, for being a creative, you know, storytelling person, I'm also a very linear thinker. And I really struggled with the fact that chapter one wasn't done. It kind of felt like I wasn't allowed to write anything beyond chapter one until it was done. So it was an exercise in just kind of letting go and coming back until it finally came together. And I think also the pressure, like, the introduction has to be good. And I felt good about the introduction. I knew that story did exactly when I was like, oh my gosh, we could tell the story about Slovenia. Like, I knew we had it. I knew we had that. So that was great. But I also know how important chapter one is to a book. If it's bad, people aren't going to keep reading. And I wanted people to get to the end of the book. So that really, it surprised me how hard it was. It surprised me, but that was really the last chapter that ended up being done.
Awesome. Thank you. Any other questions here before we wrap up with Kindra Hall?
Ooh, I love, I don't often get, like, asked, it's always storytelling questions, which is great, but it's fun to be asked, like, writing questions too.
Yeah. Awesome.